They require no special manufacture. Any set of matched proportions can be used. And yet of these candles, our tradition says, Hanerot Halalu Kadoshim Heim. These lights are holy. What makes them so? Not their chemistry nor their color, but the rich historical memories which are associated with them. Memories of a heroism of epic proportion. For these are the lights which were lit 2,100 years ago by the Maccabees. These are the lights which were lit to signalize a temple cleansed and purified of the abomination of heathen sacrifice and of heathen idol. The Maccabean rebellion is a classic triumph of the few against insurmountable odds. The Maccabees were amateurs. They were farmers and craftsmen. The legions of Antiochus were seasoned veterans and professionals. One could number the band of the Maccabees by tens. The phalanxes of Antiochus were numbered by the 10,000s. Every page of the apocryphal Book of the Maccabees is a saga of staunch courage and of indomitable will. It is a reminder, if reminder we need, that there are no little men and that there are no lost causes. There are no little men. There are no lost causes. Little man, how big you are. What a reservoir of talent and of capacity lies in you. Ordinary, average man, what an extraordinary human being can be, you can become. If you have the courage and the will, the vision and the understanding, you can shake the tree of history. And you know, it's one of the sad tragedies of living that most of us walk about in an atmosphere of despair. We feel that we are prisoners of the juggernaut powers, prisoners of fate, prisoners of economic force, prisoners of political machination. What can we do to prevent an atomic holocaust? What can we do to prevent economic reversal? And we answer this question that there is nothing that we can do. Who will listen to us? Who cares what we have to say? These lights are our rejoinder. What chance did the Maccabees have? Realistic. A small band of guerrillas against the most powerful empire of the world. They had none, yet they won. Who would listen to that little band of idealists and dreamers who 50 years ago began to go about the chanceries of the world talking about an Israel reborn? What chance was there to carve out of the Turkish Empire a new independent Jewish state? They were laughed at, these men. They were called dreamers. No one would listen to them. They accepted any platform. They spoke in any office. And finally, by perseverance, by will, these ordinary men changed the climate of world opinion. And a little nation came into being. A dream was concretized, became reality. These lights burned again. the impossible had been achieved. And who would have believed that anyone would listen to that small group of Americans who, for the last 15 years or so, have walked up and down our land, accepting any invitation which is granted them to speak, to tell us of the dangers of the rain of death from atomic fallout. They were called traitors and worse. And who would have believed that subtly but inevitably their courage, their will, their perseverance, their sacrifice would forge a new climate of national opinion, and that the statesmen of our nation would ultimately be able to reach an arrangement with the other great powers of the world in a moratorium on atmospheric testing. Little man, how big you are. If you only have the courage not only to dream the dream, but to dedicate yourself to its achievement. There is no virtue in dreaming the dream and gulping down your feelings. So many of us wish for peace, wish for justice, wish to establish a certain cause. But we are fearful, lest we lose a sale, lest an employer cut us loose, lest some friend misprize us, and we keep silent. And we rationalize that we are ordinary people, that we could not have achieved anything in any case. Little man, how misguided you are, how wrong you are. There are no limits to your power. If there are no limits to your will. Anerot halalu, kadoshim heim. These lights are holy. For their light, they are lit by the tens and the hundreds who defeated the 10,000s and the 100,000s. They are the statement that we are not prisoners of powers beyond us, but makers of our own destiny, sculptors of our own fate. If we but have the courage represented by this history. But there is more to the holiness of these lights than the simple fact of bravery and of daring. There is a bravery which is aptly called foolhardiness. There is the bravery of the professional soldier, the Hessian, the bravery of the prize fighter and of the gladiator. There is a bravery which is to dare the devil, to be a daredevil. These lights were lit by brave men who dared for God. Compare, if you will, this history, the history of the Maccabees, with that other giant saga which comes to us from ancient times, the epic of the men of Greece before the walls of Troy, Homer's great poem, the Iliad. The Greeks fought for 10 long years before the walls of Troy, before they overcame. Their feats of soldiering were unsurpassed. These were valiant men, and their deeds have brilliantly been recorded by the greatest poet of Greece. But no lights are lit for these Greek heroes, for Achilles and Agamemnon and the rest. And why not? Because they fought for a cause of little consequence. Why did they fight? They fought for Helen. They fought for honor. But most of all, they fought for hostage and for booty. And if they had never fought, the world might have been wanting one of its greatest pieces of literature, but the history of the world, the growth of civilization, would not have been changed one bit. Why did the Maccabees fight? Out of desperation. They fought for survival, for life itself. They fought for the integrity of their faith, and most of all, they fought for the survival of all that is decent and right in human civilization. Had the Maccabees not fought, our history would have been different indeed. We would not be here today. Judaism would not have given its rich legacy of civilization to the world. And more than that, our great daughter religions of Christianity and of Islam would have died stillborn. Western civilization would lack its spiritual underpinnings. And how mean a civilization it would be without these. The Maccabees were brave men, but it is not their soldiering for which we light these lights. It is because they succeeded in saving for us all that is meaningful and vital in our faith. And I would like to underscore this point for you this morning. For it sometimes seems to us that all the Maccabees did was to be stubborn, to refuse to accommodate and to adjust. What difference could it possibly have made if they'd accepted a statue of Zeus Olympios in the shrine in Jerusalem? Greek statues were well formed. They were aesthetically satisfying. What difference could it have made had the Jews been accommodating in their religion? It's a natural question for us who are moderns to ask. We tend to be accommodating of all religions. We feature in our signs, you know the phrase, it matters not where you go on Sunday, just be sure that you go. Well, how did it matter 2,100 years ago? Why do we recall this heroism? Why do we light these lights? Now, if you've ever walked the ruins of the Hellenistic civilization, across some of the beautiful mosaic floors which these people laid, or seen some of the magnificent many-columned temples which they raised, you can rightly ask this question. What would the world have lost if the Maccabees had not been so obdurate? The Hellenistic world of Antiochus was a rich and splendid world indeed. His artisans raised the great Colossus at Rhodes, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Sculptors of that world fashioned two of the greatest statues known to man, the Dying Gaul and the Laocoon. They had artisans and craftsmen of first water, and they had fine men of medicine and men of science, Euclid and Galen, men of that quality. What difference would it have made if little Judea had accepted the burden of this civilization? In the first place, had the Maccabees capitulated, assimilated into the world about, and that is what was being asked of them, they would have sounded the death knell of religion itself. Now, the Greeks, as you know, had a rich mythological heritage. There are many gods in their pantheon, and many wondrous stories are told about their gods. But by the second century before the Common Era, the literate Greek, the well-tutored Greek, no longer believed in these gods. He fancied these tales as literature. But how could these humanly proportioned stories reflect the cosmos, the true reality of life? Already a century and a half before, the greatest of the Greek thinkers, Plato and Aristotle, had glimpsed the truth that Moses had glimpsed 1,000 years before them. That life is essentially one. That this universe is exactly what the word implies. A universus, a unity. One energy force. One created thing, created by a single force. Adonai Echad. The one God. Today we speak of a space-time continuum. Today we speak of the continuity of evolution. Today we see writ large the truth that all life, animate and inanimate, the whole cosmos is one fundamentally, and that any explanation of its creation, of its meaning, of its purpose, of its direction must be framed in terms that are unitary, Jewish. And the ancient Greeks, by the second century before the Common Era, had come to this understanding. And they had become skeptical of these ancient stories, filled with disbelief. They were by and large agnostic, skeptical and cynical. Had not the Maccabeans insisted on the oneness of God, had they accommodated an idol in their sanctuary and said, it matters not what men believe, men would long since have ceased to believe. Religion must be creditable. It must be understandable, reasonable. And pantheistic idolatry is not. The Maccabees then saved a credible religion, but they did more than that. They saved a moral religion. We use this word religion vaguely and loosely. Much that we call religion is really nothing more than magic, an attempt to control destiny to our advantage. The Greek religion was such. The Greek went to his oracle, to Delphi and elsewhere. Why? To learn about the future, so that he would not take a wrong path or turn in life. The army would not go out to battle unless the auspices were sound. The Greek was initiate in any one of 100 mystery cults. Why? Because these mysteries promised him a certain control over the healing processes. Because these mysteries promised him personal immortality. The Greek offered sacrifices to the gods of his cities, his patron deities. Why? To assure rain and sun for the crop, to assure victory for the army, to assure soundness and healing for the body. To the Greek, religion was by and large a magical ceremony. If he were to learn about right and wrong, he went to his tutor, not to the temple priest. Greek religion never associated learning, knowledge, morality, ethics with religion itself. Indeed, of all the religions of the world, Judaism is the first that made what we consider to be this integral association. The Greeks would not have understood the first chapter of Isaiah, in which Isaiah, speaking in the name of God, says to the people of Israel, why do you come to this temple? Bring no more vain oblations. Your sacrifices are an abomination to me. I don't want your ceremony. Why not? Because your hands are red with blood. Because you have been oppressing the poor and the helpless. Would you worship me? Then cease to do evil. Learn to do well. Relieve the oppressed. This was the genius of Israel, that religion did not assure man the good things of life, but taught him of goodness, how to live with his neighbor, how to establish a just order in society. Had the Maccabees compromised, religion would have come down to us as a superstitious set of practices, a black art, not have been for us the social conscience of the Western world, the teacher of Western man. And for all of its architectural magnificence, Western man would still be stratified by class and by caste, callous in his relationships with others, indifferent to the quality of law which he established in his gates. It was for this that the Maccabees fought. It is in memory of this that we light this light, and there is yet one gift more which they preserved for us by their stubbornness. The Greeks, as you know, were men of fine philosophy and fine science. But for all of their philosophy and for all of their science, they never reached out to the vision of the unity of man, what we call the brotherhood of mankind. For the Greek, there was always Hellene and barbarian, free man and rude man, free man and wild man, free man and slave. To the free man, all dignity. To the slave, the whip. Slavery was not only an economic necessity in the Greek world, but it was condoned without moral conscience or any form of indignation. Aristotle, the greatest of the Greek thinkers, spoke of the slave as a living tool. Beneath contempt, he admitted to the slave no humanity. For all of their science and for all of their knowledge, the Greeks could not pierce behind the differences of color, of physiognomy, which separate the children of men, and see the elemental unity of men. It required the vision of the one Creator God, the Father of all men, to come to this vision of the united mankind. Have we not all one Father? Hath not one God created us all? This was the vision of the Bible. Only on this vision could pre-scientific man come to his arrangements with his fellow men. Had the Maccabees compromised with the worship of the one God and allowed the statue of Zeus Olympios to be raised in the temple, we would not today be fighting the last battles in the struggle to give to each and every man his place in the sun. Special privilege, the indignities of caste and class and race, these were contemned by the Maccabees. They are contemned by us. These pure lights burn to show our dedication. Nerot, Halalu, Kadoshim Haim. These lights are holy. They are holy because they represent a burden of the most elemental and significant values known to Western man. Had these lights not been lit, how much the poorer would our civilization be today? For civilization is ultimately much more than brick and stone, than the painter's brush and the sculptor's awl. Civilization is the integrity and the decency of a way of life. It is the social conscience of a time. It is these lights and all that they signify. The lighting of the Hanukkah lights is a private obligation. It is incumbent upon each and every Jew to light his own menorah. Why so? In part, of course, that each may recall the daring and the courage of the Maccabees. In part, that each may recall their sacrifice. But most of all, that each of us may ask himself, as he lights his lights, am I a worthy descendant of the Maccabees? Do I sense the same holiness in life and in my faith for which they fought? Nerot halalu kadoshim haim. Do I believe in the one God? Or have I established in my private sanctuary another Zeus? Not the Zeus Olympios of Antiochus, but the Zeus of money, or the Zeus of power, or the Zeus of beauty, or the Zeus of fame. And do I offer my abominable sacrifices to this other God? Am I a true monotheist? Nerot halalu kadoshim haim. Do I understand the ethical obligations incumbent upon of one who says that he worships the God of Israel? Am I prepared to live for standards beyond my selfish needs? Have I a social conscience? Do I concern myself for the well-being of my community? Are peace and justice and freedom abstract words which trip easily across my tongue? Are they commitments, dedications, convictions to which I dedicate my time and my talent. Anero talalu kadoshim heim. The one God created all men. Am I prepared to admit the equality of all men? To meet all men as a neighbor on my street. To permit all men as a schoolmate in my child's school. To permit all men a say in the management of my government. To permit all nations a say in the peaceful arrangement of our world. Anerot halalu kadoshim heim. These lights are holy. And their holiness devolves upon us. They refract the ancient sacrifice. They challenge us to a life of decency and holiness on our own parts.